And thank you for not clapping. Being my last Sunday, I'm going to take full advantage of the free pulpit. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's part-time consulting minister for about 14 more hours. If this is one of your first times here, or you're returning after an absence, there will be a spot later on in the service where you can introduce yourselves if you'd like to do that. And as you regulars know, we encourage visitors and people new to Unitarian Universalism to come to more than one service because our services are different every Sunday. Sometimes a minister will do them, sometimes a person from the congregation will, sometimes we have outside speakers. But none of that matters as much as the fact that you are welcome here, no matter where you are on this journey of life, this sacred journey. You are welcome here. Please note that you may see me next Sunday in a completely unofficial capacity, because I'm a Mary Oliver fan, which will become quite evident as this service goes along. And I would like to attend the service next Sunday that Amber and friends, one friend, will be doing about Mary Oliver. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you, Amber, for your gracious and kind response to my using Mary Oliver this morning. You said, "Oh, it'll be a nice preview of next week's service," or something to that effect. So thank you so much. We are sharing our offering this morning, as we have been all quarter. So I think that means this will be the last Sunday. We'll switch next week, I think. You'll switch next week. With the Catalyst Project, you can read more about that in your order of service. The opening words are, surprise, by Mary Oliver, titled "The Gardener." Have I lived enough? Have I loved enough? Have I considered right action, capital R, capital A, enough? Have I come to any conclusions? Have I experienced happiness with sufficient gratitude? Have I endured loneliness with grace? I say this, or perhaps I'm just thinking it. Actually, I probably think too much. Then I step out into the garden, where the gardener, who is said to be a simple man, is tending his children, the roses. Mary, if you would light the chalice, thank you. We light this chalice to remind us that both the dark and the light are gifts given to us, and that during our lifetimes, we continually weave them together to form our personal and our communal tapestries. I'm too short reading, so to go along with that, and you can sit if you'd like. Two readings from Mary Oliver. First, the uses of sorrow, which she says at the beginning, in parentheses, "In my sleep, I dreamed this poem. Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this, too, was a gift." And this second poem from her, titled "If I Were." There are lots of ways to dance. And to spin. Turn the heat down here a little bit. Sometimes it just starts my feet first, then my entire body. I am spinning. No one can see it, but it is happening. I am so glad to be alive. I am so glad to be loving and loved. Even if I were close to the finish, even if I were at my final breath, I would be here to take a stand, bereft of such astonishments, but for them. If I were a Sufi, for sure I would be one of the spinning kind. The reading that I want to share with you this morning is a little bit from The Five Things We Cannot Change by David Richo, who writes, "There are some things in life over which we have no control, probably most things. We discover in the course of our lives that reality refuses to bow to our commands. Another force, sometimes with a sense of humor, usually comes into play with different plans. We are forced to let go when we want so much to hold on, and to hold on when we want so much to let go. Our lives, all our lives, include unexpected twists, unwanted endings, and challenges of every puzzling kind." Reinhold Niebuhr, an American Protestant theologian, composed a prayer. Some of you will be familiar with these words, a prayer that has become the cornerstone of the recovery movements. "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference." This is a profound aspiration. I always get hung up on the wisdom part. But what are the things we cannot change? Are they unique to each of us? Or are there some things that all of us must acknowledge and accept in order to find peace in our lives? There are five unavoidable givens, five immutable facts that come to visit all of us many times over. Everything changes and ends. Things do not always go according to plan. Life is not always fair. Pain is part of life. People are not loving and loyal all the time. I'm missing a page. Well, I can wing it. There are at least one person here who knows that there were no printers to access here at Prairie as I got into my final editing. There's something, he says, I'll call him Richo, about the flip side, about the things that help us through those five things that we cannot change. Here they are. Our willingness, applies, he thinks, to humanity in general. And it's a much longer, it's twice as long as the five things we cannot change. Our willingness to put ourselves second, even to risk our life for others. Our capacity to forgive and let go. Our refusal to accept defeat or abuse in the face of any odds. Our unflappable hope. Our knack for showing our best when things are at their worst. Our skill at finding order in chaos and meaning in disaster. Our intuition, which reveals more than we logically know. Our tendency to be honest even when no one is looking. Our striving for what lies beyond our grasp. Our inclination to stretch ourselves, our power to say, do, or be something that leads to healing ourselves and others, our abiding sense that the universe is friendly and that there is ultimately a loving intent in all that happens. Some of these are a leap. Our kindly understanding of and loving reaching out to those who do not choose to live in accord with this list. Anyway, I don't like to do infomercials, but It's a good book. It's not very big. The Five Things We Cannot Change. And there's a subtitle, which I don't remember. So, here we go. Part one. Why are we here? Annie Dillard writes that we are here to abet creation and to witness to it, to notice each other's beautiful face and complex nature, so that creation need not play to an empty house. Mary Oliver's poem, The Gardener, which I used as the opening words, reminded me of Dillard's words and how appropriate both poets' words are here in the springtime of the year. Every year around this time, I am completely astounded by, overwhelmed by, those first flowers. A few days ago, I was walking home. I live between Quarry Park and Hoyt Park. I was walking home, I went around a corner, and I did a double take. What I saw that caused the double take surprises me every time, and I didn't know the name until Barb Park told me the name years ago, because I say this every spring. I think it's the snowdrops. How could they be there? What are they doing there, of all places? Right beside a path up into Quarry Park. They're blooming in sort of a foresty area. Lots of trees, no light. Well, there must be light, but light just at certain times of the morning, I think. And then yesterday, 2 days ago, I saw my first, I never know what the plural of this word is, crocuses, croci. I saw the first ones, and I experienced all the same sensations. So why are we here, if not to abet creation and witness to it so that creation need not play to an empty house? Surely we are not here to get mired in ill will, ugliness, dissatisfaction, arrogance, greed, selfishness, anger, guilt, meanness. You get the idea. Of course, the question, why are we here, can be asked on several different levels. The question initially came into my mind when I was thinking about this morning's service in the context of this organization, this institution that we call Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. Once upon a time, long, long ago, in a land far away, a small but determined group of people left the Mother Church and set out to create a second Unitarian Universalist congregation in a faraway galaxy known as Madison, Wisconsin. Okay, maybe not so very long ago, but almost 52 years ago, and a lot could happen in 50 years, 50 plus years. This band of settlers called their new community Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. Among other things, sometimes they called it Prairie Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. And I will go out of here proclaiming that the acronym for that is a bit kinder than P-U-U-S. So think about that as you're changing your bylaws and things. And through the years, this congregation grew, shrunk a little, rebounded, grew, lost members, gained members, had contentious moments, didn't always get along perfectly, but what organization ever does? Members and friends were extremely proud of their reputation as flaming free thinkers. Sometimes, I would argue, too often, too much individualism can be a detriment to the overall organization. Yet, our intrepid band kept at it, kept up the struggle to balance the idiosyncrasies of individuals with the demands of institutional life. And they learned a lot, and still are. And all the while, this band of intrepid free thinkers has been working on maintaining an organization and building a caring, loving community, a beloved community. I'm going to use that phrase a lot in the next few minutes, and it's going to be with a capital B and a capital C. All the while they, that's you, have found the energy and the desire to also tackle problems and issues out there in the wider world. You know, those easily solvable problems, world peace, environmental concerns, human rights. We are here, we choose to be here, to enlarge our personal tapestries and to build a communal one. For the last few weeks, Carole King's tapestry poem, which she bequeathed to us in the form of a song, has been looping through my mind. And I eventually caught on that I needed to weave that word into this morning's service. There are two dictionary definitions of the word tapestry if you use just a plain, simple dictionary. A heavy, hand-woven, reversible textile used for hanging curtains, upholstery, and characterized by complicated pictorial designs. And two, and this is one of those ones that definitions that drives me crazy because it uses the word in the definition, something resembling tapestry, as in complexity or richness of design. Now, at home, I still have a three-volume dictionary set. If you look tapestry up in that dictionary, there's only one meaning. It's about this long, and I swear it's trying to teach you how to make a tapestry. My eyes glazed over after the first three words. I don't sew. I don't make things. So here's what we know. We know that tapestry is complicated. We know that eventually a picture or a design might appear as the bits and the pieces and the scraps and the experiences are woven together. There are many reasons why we are here, why we gather in this space, week after week, month after month, year after year, and all of the reasons for why we are here can be summed up in one word, community. All that we do in spaces like this, all over the world, even in India and the Philippines, all over the world, throughout UU land, all that we do is done because we are seeking community. We are here to build and maintain the beloved community. And I hope that after all this time I have been with you, I have given you some idea of what that phrase, beloved community, means. It's unattainable, but we can always work towards it and kind of try to forget we're perfectionists, because it's always worth striving for. It's marked by what you might expect: love, goodwill, kindness, caring, listening, a willingness to be vulnerable towards each other, and opening towards each other. For me, poetry and song do a much better job of expressing what I think of as fundamental or essential truths. We're singing a lot this morning. Singing is one of my favorite things. And I'm taking full advantage of the freedom of the pulpit, as I said earlier. One of the greatest gifts and strengths we have as Unitarian Universalists, remember that, please remember that, after I'm gone, like I'm doing my eulogy now, is freedom of the pulpit. So I'm taking advantage of that to share some of my favorite poetry with you as well. When did it happen? Title of a very, very short poem by Mary Oliver. When did it happen? It was a long time ago. Where did it happen? It was far away. No, tell, where did it happen? In my heart. What is your heart doing now? Remembering. Remembering. Tapestry. My life has been a tapestry of rich and royal hue, an everlasting vision of the ever-changing view. A wondrous woven magic in bits of blue and gold, a tapestry to feel and see, impossible to hold. Once amid the soft silver sadness in the sky, there came a man of fortune, a drifter passing by. He wore a torn and tattered cloth around his leathered hide and a coat of many colors, yellow, green, on either side. He moved with some uncertainty, as if he didn't know just what he was there for or where he ought to go. Once he reached for something golden hanging from a tree, and his hand came down empty. Soon, within my tapestry, along the rutted road, he sat down on a river rock and turned into a toad. It seemed that he had fallen into someone's wicked spell, and I wept to see him suffer, though I didn't know him well. As I watched in sorrow, there suddenly appeared a figure gray and ghostly beneath a flowing beard. In times of deepest darkness, I've seen him dressed in black. Now my tapestry's unraveling. He's come to take me back. He's come to take me back. It has been interpreted and reinterpreted and reinterpreted. Go on the internet and look at all the fascinating interpretations of that poem. Part two, what have we done? This question also could have several different interpretations. Try putting the emphasis on different words. What have we done? What have we done? What have we done? The best way to answer this inquiry, I think, is to recall what I have said over and over and over about growth. Growth is not just about numbers, as in how many members does Prairie have? That sort of growth in membership is important, of course, but it is not the only marker or indicator of how well a congregation is doing. There are two other kinds of growth that are just as important. Personal growth, what I call spiritual or sacred growth, is just as important as numerical growth. And the third one, interpersonal growth, that is growth in how we relate to each other, equally important. Now it's going to get really interesting because this is where the printer died. We have a lot of scribbling. So if you need to take a nap, that's okay too. Okay, here are a few of my favorite things that we have done together over the last 6 years and 8 months. That's how long I've been here. That's how close to 7 years I got. We have experienced joy, expressed gratitude, contemplated the complexity of life, not just the complexity of human interactions, but the complexity of the interconnected web. We have considered our place in that interconnected web. We have occasionally allowed ourselves to be vulnerable with each other. We have struggled with how difficult it is to be human. Together, we have taken action against injustice in various ways. We've marched, some of us have marched, and some of us have marched a lot, in protests, in support of gay rights or migrant workers or whatever you can think. We have marched. You have made, I think, one of the best decisions you ever made when you voted to give half of your Sunday morning offering to various, it's been mostly local organizations, nonprofits that are trying to right some of the wrongs in our world. That was a tremendous thing that you did and are doing, and it worked, and it's still working. We have learned about many different beliefs and tried to learn how to go beyond being just tolerant of those beliefs. I actually don't like that word, tolerant. Even if those beliefs vary greatly from our own. And you have begun, we began, we barely began, but a beginning is better than no beginning, to better communicate with each other. You have a long way to go. I'm not pulling any punches on some of this, okay? To seriously and intently consider what it means to be empathetic, what it means to be compassionate. And all of this brings us right back to where we were at the end of part one, building a beloved community. And this would, I think, be a good place to add another ingredient that is essential to the making of at least my beloved community, humor. Humor, and I have a couple of funny stories coming up. and they'll mean some more to some of you than to others. Being able to laugh at ourselves. We're not very good at this as Unitarian Universalists. And I will say, Rick and Barb, it's the Unitarian side that fails the most here, not the Universalist side. We are so high and mighty. We are the elite, and we are the elite worldwide. I mean, if you look at the number of degrees we have, the money we make. Now, I know some of you don't fit in that category. I appreciate that. We can be so condescending. We have to learn how to laugh at ourselves. We shake with joy, another Mary Oliver really short poem, one of my favorites. Easily memorized. Oh, thank you. We shake with joy, we shake with grief. What a time they have, these two, housed as they are in the same body. Another short one. Three things to remember. As long as you're dancing, you can break the rules. Sometimes breaking the rules is just extending the rules. Sometimes there are no rules. Two kinds of deliverance. A social justice-oriented poem of Oliver's. One, three parts, one. Last night, the geese came back, slanting fast from the blossom of the rising moon down to the black pond. A muskrat swimming in the twilight saw them and hurried to the secret lodges to tell everyone spring had come. And so it had. By morning, when I went out, the last of the ice had disappeared. Blackbirds sang on the shores. Every year, the geese returning do this. I don't know how. Two. The curtains opened, and there was an old man in a headdress of feathers, leather leggings, and a vest made from the skin of some animal. He danced in a kind of surly rapture. And the trees in the fields far away began to mutter and suck up their long roots. Slowly they advanced until they stood pressed to the schoolhouse windows. Three. I don't know lots of things, but I know this. Next year, when spring flows over the starting point, I'll think I'm going to drown in the shimmering miles of it. And then one or two birds will fly me over the threshold. As for the pain of others, of course it tries to be abstract. But then there flares up out of a vanished wilderness, like fire, still blistering, the wrinkled face of an old Chippewa, smiling, hating us, dancing for his life. Part three, where are we going? You're going to try to read my notes. Okay. First, a story about going places. This is a story from the days I was a member of First Unitarian Society, and I was in the choir. And that particular choir had, shall we say, memorable parties. There's one other person in this room who gets what that means. Well, no, there are a couple of you. As my son used to say, Mom has her Friday nights on Thursday nights, because Thursday night was the night we had choir rehearsal. So I'm walking home. At that point in time, we owned a house between Franklin and Farley on Chamberlain, which, if I still owned, I could pay off my student loans. But anyway, so not far from First Unitarian up Farley to the house. It was 1 a.m. I had my choir folder with me, and all of a sudden a police car appeared and pulled over and stopped me and said that I matched the description of a person who had just escaped from the psych ward. at the veterans hospital. Okay. And there might have been a little alcohol involved here, too. But I was all together. And I said, oh, no, officer. I was at choir practice at 1 a.m. And they looked, you know, a little skeptical. And I said, church choir practice? What kind of a church has choir practice until 1 a.m.? I said, the one right up the street with the copper roof. So where are we going? Sometimes it's always an adventure. 2 years ago, in the spring of 2017, Prairie's wonderful, marvelous history committee, and we have Barb, Mary, and Ruth here, and there's a fourth one, Rosemary, because those four, their names need to be spoken as often as possible, like saints, what they compiled in the book they've done. So. But that history committee asked me, and some of you may not know this, to write the introduction to volume one.
Nobody's... There's only one introduction.
Oh, okay, good. Glad I wasn't slighted. Here's some of what I wrote 2 years ago. Prairie people are generous with their time and their money and their energy. Prairie has many strengths, including a strong religious education program, consistently supported and championed over the years by this congregation. And I will add that I think that is another one of your best decisions, was to hire someone to do the religious education program early on. Prairie people are compassionate. The caring committee is the best one that I have worked with in any congregation, even as a lay leader before I entered ministry. Prairie is too large for a part-time minister to take care of all the pastoral care needs by her or himself. The caring committee helps make pastoral care manageable and more efficient. Perhaps Prairie's greatest strength, and also it's possibly one of its biggest weaknesses, is that it takes its free-thinking heritage seriously. Being a free thinker can lead people to a wide variety of beliefs, and Prairie has them all. From atheist to Unitarian Universalist Christian and everything in between. Prairie is proud of this, as it should be. Every organization has its weaknesses as well as its strengths. Every institution that I have ever been part of struggles with communication, how to do it better. Every institution also struggles with a tendency to be stuck in old ways of thinking because, quote, that's how we've always done it, unquote. Prairie is no exception. I have watched, and I remember I wrote this 2 years ago, I have watched you become more and more aware of your growing edges, that's what we called them in seminary, aka weaknesses, and more determined to work on them. You are beginning to recognize your tendency to fear and mistrust leadership. No editing of the, no. Rather than work cooperatively with it, which sometimes results in individuals acting as independent agents rather than consulting with others before taking action or making major decisions. Unfortunately, that way of being in community tends to limit growth. I wish for you in the coming years more and more good communication skills, better listening habits, and more cooperative decision making. And I went on because, you know, I have a tendency to go on. And you can read that after you purchase the book. Mary, you didn't give me that announcement this morning. Still for sale, right? Yep, okay. Okay. We are here, as I said, to build and maintain the beloved community. This is a scary undertaking. And it is always, always countercultural. Think of that. Think about that. And maintaining such a community, assuming success in building one to begin with, maintaining such an organization is hard work. It involves having patience, understanding the word fragility, understanding the word vulnerability, being willing to be vulnerable. This takes great courage. Carl Jung wrote, The life that I could still live, I should live. And the thoughts that I could still think, I should think. Where are we going? Well, I'm going to the Wisconsin Film Festival for over the next few several days, but I'm not sure where you're going. But that was a moment. That probably would have gotten edited out if I'd had a printer. Remember, I'm working from really raw stuff here. It's not exactly true that I don't know where you're going. I think here's another thing. I think you made the right decision about the remodeling. I know that it took a gasp on several of your parts, but you're not that far away from the total amount. And the small mortgage that might have to happen is no big deal. It's fine. I think you just need to, remodel. And I think it was also, and I was kind of on the fence about the annex. I didn't know you real well when you were talking about buying the annex, but I think that was a good decision too. And so we've come back around, to that word, community. Here we go with some of the not pulling any punches. You won't grow in any of the three ways that I mentioned until you stop being excessively proud of your eccentricities and extremes. There's nothing wrong with that, but you all take it too far sometimes. So maybe think about that a little. Prairie needs to think about humility. And in my humble opinion, the art of being humble. I hope that you won't lose your Unitarian Universalist identity in the upcoming months and years. But that's been one of the problems here for me in the last few months. I see signs of that possibility. I hear mutterings about Unitarian Universalists aren't special, aren't unique. Well, we're not special in the sense of being superior, but we're unique. And the main definition of the word unique is not special superiority. It is special, but not in the sense of, look it up, being unique to the point of that condescension that I was talking about. Because UCC folks are unique too. I don't think a lot of Catholics are unique anymore because of where they've gone. But anyway, you all have to be honest about what you want your identity to be. You have to talk about it. You have to think. You have to have conversations about who you are and what you want to be, and maybe why you're so afraid of ministry. You can argue with that one with me if you want to. Beloved community won't ever work. It's not sustainable if you talk about each other behind your backs. There's been a lot of that. And we all do it. You think I've never talked about any of you? But usually not with somebody from Prairie. My sister hears a lot. You have to not ignore what I call the T's, capital letter T. Trust. Your level of trust with me. I take as much responsibility for this as any of you should. Transparency. Just talk. If you have a problem with someone, just go to them and talk to it, which brings up the third T. Triangulation. Don't put something in the minutes, the board minutes, saying the minister did such and such when the minister didn't. Go to the minister and say, did you do this? Or don't talk about each other that way either. Just pay attention to the T's. Beloved community won't happen anywhere in any... I was debated saying this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. It won't happen anywhere in any organization if you allow people with control issues to be in charge. Okay, moving right along. Don't worry, I'm going to end with something funny. Beloved community, in a faith tradition, you don't like the word faith, put something else in there. won't happen if the young people have no religious education. I'm purposely using the word religious. You can put whatever word there you want to. You can call it whatever you want to, but it is still religious education. It is something you can't get anywhere else in the world, except maybe, you know, in a UCC church or a good Methodist church, a good Presbyterian church. And I'm using that word religion as I have over and over and over again used it in the context of Unitarian Universalism. James Luther Adams, a famous, in theological circles, UU theologian in the late 1960s, 70s, 80s, remember, he defined religion, he wasn't the first one to do this, as that which ultimately concerns us. And I have repeatedly used Forest Church, Unitarian Universalist minister, contemporary, even though he's died, I've constantly used his definition of religion. It's our response to the human dilemma of being alive and knowing we'll die. There's nothing supernatural in that, folks. You can put something supernatural in it if you want to. Stop letting the other end of the religious, the faith spectrum, take away the good words. Stop it. Okay. Enough scolding. Unitarian Universalism is unique. It's special. It's flawed, as all institutions are. Unitarian Universalism, though, offers a kind of hope and so many possibilities that you're not going to get offered in much of this modern world. There's nothing wrong with the word modern. This tradition is precious. Celebrate it. Rejoice that you are heirs to this tradition. Keep it going, and please, please, pass it on. I did my chaplaincy, which is required, the hoops you jump through to become a minister. You can do it in a prison. You can do it in a number of places. I did what most people do. I did it in a hospital. I did it at North Carolina Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Big hospital. I was the first Unitarian Universalist they ever had, and they pride themselves on being the oldest, the biggest, and the best chaplaincy program in the country. They were wonderful. I learned a lot. So every day you go in and you get a list, you know, of patients, and I think this is still true. You're supposed to pick a religion. I think probably fewer and fewer people do when they go. So it's a 3-month long summer thing. Day after day, we kept no Unitarian Universalists, nope. Just, you know, a lot of Baptists, Lutherans, ministers, but no UUs. The last week, my very last week of being in the program, there's a Unitarian Universalist. Oh, I get to the room as fast as I can. And there's an elderly man and his wife, and wonderful, wonderful people. Oh, you're, because they could read it on my, you know, no, they couldn't, but I told them that I was a Unitarian Universalist. Oh, we're so excited. You know, we've seen Baptists and, of course, the Catholic nun who comes around. And he was not very well, this man. However, he leaped out of his bed like Lazarus. And with three of us did a little jig there in the hotel room. Cherish this tradition. Story by Mary Oliver. When I moved from one house to another, there were many things I had no room for. What does one do? I rented a storage space and filled it. Years passed. Occasionally I went there and looked in, but nothing happened. Not a single twinge of the heart. As I grew older, the things I cared about grew fewer, but were more important. So one day I undid the lock and called the trash man. He took everything. I felt like the little donkey when his burden is finally lifted. Things, burn them, make a beautiful fire. More room in your heart for love, for the trees, for the birds who own nothing, the reason they can fly. Moments. There are moments that cry out to be fulfilled, like telling someone you love them, or giving your money away, all of it. Your heart is beating, isn't it? You're not in chains, are you? There is nothing more pathetic than caution when headlong might save a life, even possibly your own. Prayer. May I never not be frisky. May I never not be risque. May my ashes, when you have them, friend, and give them to the ocean, leap in the froth of the waves, still loving movement, still ready beyond all else to dance for the world. In the order of service, it's the correct title for the closing words is In Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this: the fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes, to let it go, to let it go. May you be well. May you grow in all the right ways. Thank you for 6 years and 8 months. It's because I tap danced, isn't it? The standing, because I never got a standing ovation. Thank you. Greet your neighbor, go in peace.